My name is John, and I'm a sinner.
I desperately need God's help. I cannot on my own become the person I know that I want to do, and this has deep and tragic consequences. But there is good news in this community, in the fellowship of the withered hand. The worse your story, the warmer your welcome here. God just says, come on home. I'll be with you. I'll help you. That's what we're learning through this remarkable framework of the 12th step, the greatest spiritual discovery, folks have said, of the last century or so. And we looked at the first couple of steps so far. Hopefully, if you've not been traveling along on this journey, you can go back and listen to those episodes. Begin by just admitting, I am powerless. I can't get there. And my life is unmanageable. Life governed by self-will and ego is a train wreck. And then came to believe that there is a power greater than myself, and he can do what I can't. He can restore me. And then step three is now an act of the will that we're working on now. Made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Although this sounds scary, there's actually great freedom in it. So I want to start today by reminding you of a story. It's in a series, Band of Brothers, about World War II. And there is a soldier in a platoon, Private Blythe, and he is terrified. He pretends to be injured when he's not. He is filled with shame and loathing and self-rejection because of his enormous fear. And finally, he has a conversation with, I think it's Lieutenant Spears, and it's a conversation that illumines the need for step three. He'd been hiding in a ditch during a battle when they're invading France, and Spears said, you know why you hid in that ditch? And Blythe says, because I was scared. And Spears, no, everybody was scared. You hid in that ditch because you think there's still hope. But Blythe, the only hope you have is to accept the fact that you are already dead. And the sooner you accept that, the sooner you will be able to function as a soldier is supposed to function. All war depends on that. Luce Means wrote a wonderful book about hope, and he talks about a study in it that actually looks at, these were soldiers, I think pilots, who flew in World War II. And it talks about how as long as they had a hope that they were going to get to the other side, they would also live with this enormous sense of fear. But if they resolved themselves to the fact that, nope, I'm already gone, I'm already dead, there was a strange kind of freedom in that. Jesus put it like this when he was talking to people about following him. Whoever wants to be my disciple, now this is the third step, must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. That is, if I think I can be in control and make myself the center of the life, my life, and make my will and my ego run things, which I'm so prone to do. I want to have this. I want to be recognized. I want more success. I want more money. And that way is death. And then I will lose my life. But whoever loses their life, I have died to those kind of petty, small-minded, ignoble dreams. Receives back something far, far greater. I think it was Henry Nouwen who said, I hear the voice of God saying to me, you give me everything and I will give you everything. And it is this strange truth. The will is made to surrender to God. This is what we're talking about today. So I want to invite you today to say this prayer, your will be done. God, your will be done. As best I can, as concretely as I can, I want to surrender. I want to turn my life and my will over to you. You'd put it in form of a question. Jesus says, if anybody wants to follow me, let them take up their cross. Now, the image would have been real well known to anybody who hears him. And that day, the Romans were experts at crucifixion, and anybody that they considered a threat to their empire, they would consign to that. It was called the slave's death, because if you were a Roman citizen, you couldn't die that way. It was meant to humiliate you. So here's the question. If somebody picks up that crossbeam and they're carrying it to the place of their crucifixion, what do you think they're thinking about? Or what do you think they're not thinking about? I'll tell you what they're not thinking about. They're not thinking, well, my 401k is not looking very good today. I'm afraid I may not have enough money in the bank. I wonder how I look carrying this cross. I wonder what people are thinking of me. I wonder if I'm being successful. There's a whole lot of thoughts that they're not thinking in that moment. And the strange freedom that comes to us in surrender is a kind of detachment from all the petty, stupid, foolish stuff that my soul on its own is attached to and that my willpower cannot free me from. And, oh, God, help me die to that. Help me die to that. Help me die to that. Not so that I live with emptiness and pain and anguish and hollowness forever, but so that I can come alive to something greater. The will was made to surrender to God because somehow when we surrender to what is good, when we take my own desires and my ego off the throne, then it's like I'm put into this Gulf Stream of spiritual reality where I can actually find life. Some of the most inspiring words about this that I know were written by a man named Dag Hammarskjöld, and he was a Swedish statesman. John Kennedy said that he was the greatest statesman of the 20th century, and he was the youngest man ever named Secretary General of the United Nations. He was stunned by this. He was quite a humble person, led quite a humble life, and it was on April 1st, 1953, that he was initially informed by a journalist that the council at the UN had named him Secretary General. He thought it was an April Fool's joke. I'm not making this up. He got three phone calls from journalists saying, hey, you're the man, before he actually believed it himself. And he served with enormous distinction. He died when he was on his way on a peacekeeping mission to the Congo in a plane crash. And to this day, the circumstances of that crash are mysterious and disputed. And he may well have been murdered because of his efforts. After he died, they discovered a book. He had started it when he was quite a young man. It was the only book that he ever published. And it was published posthumously. Interestingly, he was also the guy, only person ever to receive the Nobel Prize for Peace that was awarded posthumously. And in this book, there was an enormous spiritual journey, his relationship with God that was revealed, and it was remarkably deep. They also found when his plane crashed, not only was he being the Secretary General of the United Nations on his way to a peacekeeping mission in the Congo, he was also translating Martin Buber's I and Thou into Swedish. So this is a guy who didn't waste his spare time. Here's part of what was written in that little book that's the story of his life with God. It's called Markings. And in one place he writes this, I don't know who or what put the question. I don't know when it was put. I don't even remember answering. But at some moment, I did answer yes to someone or something. And from that hour, I was certain that existence is meaningful and that therefore my life in self-surrender had a goal. Martin Luther King Jr. used to say, the person who does not have something worth dying for has nothing worth living for. And so Jesus comes again to you and me today in the midst of our attachments to whatever is small and petty and issues that same great invitation. If you would follow me, then deny yourself, take up your cross, die. Regard yourself as dead. And there's a kind of freedom in that. I know. It sounds like bad news. I know everything inside us screams against doing this. But if I will die to everything that is small and petty and ignoble, then at last I can come alive. Give me everything and I will give you everything. Your will be done. That's the third step. I'll say one more word about this step to keep it from getting too abstract, because there's always a danger in the spiritual life. In a moment, I might be moved about the beauty of a thought and think, oh, yes, God, I surrender all. And then the next moment, somebody asks me to do something. It's like, no, I haven't surrendered at all. So just to make this quite concrete, very often in Jesus' day, now in recovery circles, in AA, often it will involve alcohol. That's part of the beauty and the power of this way of life, as folks will remember every day, I'm not drinking anymore. If you don't have an identified addiction in that way, you might just start with money and just surrender some money today in a way that you wouldn't otherwise do. Because we live in a world that has a big agenda for your money. Well, Nancy and I were talking with some friends this week about how with another one of our dogs years ago, we'd take it into the vet and like the vet would have all kinds of ways. Here's thousands of dollars you should spend on your dog. Like, for example, your dog, his teeth are not really healthy. He's got to have great teeth. You got to spend a ton of money, get a retainer, braces. I don't know what all that was. It was like, Nancy says, I'm not going to do this. So then the person came out with a doggy toothbrush and said that, Nancy, I'll give you instructions on how to brush your dog's teeth to care for his. And they said, oh, I'm so sorry. If I gave you the impression I was the kind of person who would brush my dog's teeth, I really apologize. It's like everybody's got an agenda for the way that you will spend your money, and money has a way, an agenda for the way that you will spend it. Money will say to you, I will make you secure. I will make you successful. I am the scorecard that you can monitor to see if your life has been significant and worthwhile. And Jesus says, you know, trust me with your money. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear. Give and it will be given to you. Give and it will be given to you. Be generous. And sometimes there's people who surrender, like Zacchaeus. Give half everything I have to the poor. Pay back all the people I've defrauded four times that. And then sometimes there's people that will not surrender, like the rich young ruler. So today, just to make surrender concrete, there'll be an opportunity that you will have to give. Maybe it will be somebody that you see on the street, somebody that's homeless. I know that's not the best way to systemically combat poverty, but still. Or maybe it's to send money to a worthy cause, to be giving, as lots of us are right now with the fires that have been going on in Southern California, to bring relief there. My old school, Fuller, is in the middle of all that. They've got a fund, and that's one of the things that Nance and I have given to. Just today, sometime, as a way of making surrender will. Your will be done, your will be done. Made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. That's the prayer. That's the invitation. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
Hey, you just finished a video from our series, Steps, which is based on John's new book releasing February 4th by the same name, Steps. So if you're catching this video before February 4th, you might want to pre-order the book. You can do that at our website, becomenew.com/steps. And when you pre-order, it will unlock exclusive content from John just for you. While you're there, you can subscribe to Become New to make sure you don't miss any future episodes in this series or any other videos that we do. As a community, we believe in spiritual growth one day at a time, and a big part of that is prayer. There's a team of us that meets each weekday, Monday through Friday, to pray for viewers just like yourself. So if you have a specific prayer request, we would love to pray with you. You can text it to us to 855-888-0444 or email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.